headed back in. Condon! A second of the game for Van Veen, and he is loving it. Cornelius on the edge of the ball. Toro! How special is that for his first Motherwell goal? For Slatnik, and he shot away! It's a fantastic strike! And it thundered in by Liam Grimshaw! What a moment for him! The fans' favourite!
Hello, welcome to the MFC podcast. Tonight, myself and Pepe will look back in games against Hibs and Hearts. We'll look ahead to a busy week where Motherwell play St Mirren away and then host Celtic. We'll discuss the closure of the transfer window and new arrivals at Fir Park, potential departures, and I'm sure there'll be more that I've already forgotten in this intro. How you going, mate?
Oh, good. I'm just glad that you eventually got that intro done. Was that three attempts?
Yeah, but we started at 9 o'clock. It's now 9:10, and we've only got 42 seconds into the podcast, so we're doing well so far. We'll start at the present day. A 2-0 defeat yesterday at Tynecastle. Always a difficult place to go, mate, as we previewed last week. And I think it's fair to say we were masters of our own downfall. Two pretty bad mistakes leading to both Hearts' goals. We had the chances, we weren't able to take them. And as the kind of old adage goes, if you don't take your chances, you're not going to win football matches. And that's what we found. We're now 3 games into a return to league action. We've scored 1 goal. We had 90 minutes in the cup against Morton and we failed to score. We did get to an extra time, I suppose, but goals are a problem. That's one goal in, what, 360 minutes. That's a concern. I think that's the reason why we've not managed to pick up 3 points since Boxing Day. And somehow, though, we've remained fourth place. The results have went in our favour, but we need to find a scoring touch and we need to cut out those silly errors if we're going to have any aspirations of putting up a fight at the top end of the table.
I'll go back to the Hearts game first. I was at the game and I didn't actually appreciate how clear-cut the chances were for Van Veen. Obviously, when you're sitting up the other end, you don't actually realise, you either think that he's closer and the chance is easier, but on reflection, when I actually looked at it in sports scene, we could have really been in at half time in the lead. I don't think we played poorly, but at the same time, when I left the ground, I didn't think that we deserved to win. I actually got talking to a Hearts fan walking back to the bus, and he actually commented saying that he thought we had played really well, and they were quite fortunate. And at that, I was quite surprised, but it wasn't until, as I said this morning, me and Ben watched the game back, and Van Veen's two chances were two that you'd expect your kind of first choice striker to put away. You're 100% right about has been gifting them two goals. For the first part of the game, I thought Liam Shaw looked quite accomplished. But Liam Shaw gets caught in the ball out beside the dugouts, which leads to the attack for Hearts. And then it's just a error after error. And there seems to be this whole gap appears for Andy Halliday. To be fair, it was a good finish into the bottom corner. And you kind of feel as if that kind of went. Graham Alexander said at the time it was a kind of sucker punch. And I agree with that. And then the same kind of thing again. Liam Shaw getting caught in the ball. And I thought, you know, they're up and it's two. Probably looking at the actual highlights of the game, I was more disappointed with the finishes than what I was when I was coming away for the game. So all in all, performance wasn't too bad. And it's one of the games, when you look at the start of the season, that you would expect. It's almost got a 2-0 defeat on it every time we go there recently. It is a concern about a forward line. I emphasised that in the last podcast. and it's really difficult to try and say if this new signing is going to make the difference, because I think anybody would be a liar if they said they had been keeping an eye on him or had seen him playing. I mean, he had a good season in the Greek league, where I read a report that Panathinaikos were looking at him, but he ended up going to the Belgian top flight and never really done the business there. So we don't know what we're getting. It'd be quite exciting to see him. But does that mean that's the end of our transfer business? I don't know. I don't know what the best front three is. I've seen a couple of people on social media maybe commenting in relation to Van Veen seems to be maybe not firing all cylinders. But the unfortunate thing is we don't really have anybody that's going to fill his boots. Unless we pull a good sign out of the bag, and I just really don't see it. I think if anything's going to happen, it'll be players going out. I'd really be surprised if we sign anybody else in this upcoming window.
I picked in one of the positives being that Hibs lost yesterday at home to Livingston. Dundee United lost a late goal against Celtic to lose 1-0. Aberdeen were cancelled. So at the end of the day, despite the fact we've only picked up 1 point from a possible 9 since the restart, we still have maintained a position in the league table, still in fourth spot. And still, I think if we were to summarise the season to this point, we would have to be fairly satisfied with a lot. The loss tally has kind of crept up now, and we're 9 wins, 9 defeats as well in the league so far, 5 draws. So it's a reasonable, if unremarkable record, I would say. It's the kind of tipping point of the season for me, though. Now we're going to run where we've got the 3 games in the space of 7 or 8 days. St Mirren away, Celtic home, Dundee United away. All teams that will harbour aspirations, albeit different aspirations, St Mirren are chasing that first ever top 6 finish. And they've started the new year well. Celtic are looking like a real threat at this moment in time. They're in fantastic form. Who knows what will happen when they host Rangers on Wednesday, but they could be coming to Fir Park, top of the league, and really looking like they're in a one-track mind towards claiming or reclaiming the title. And then you've got Dundee United, who are still only a couple of points behind us in the table, and have dropped into the bottom half, so they'll be targeting us and really be out to prove a point, especially with the likes of Tony Watt coming up against us. So there's a busy week ahead, and I said in the last podcast that I thought that the games against Hibs and Hearts would be very significant. I think just in general, the run that we're having of almost constant games, it is going to be so significant. And I think by the time we record, perhaps after the Dundee United game, we'll have a rough idea of where we can kind of lie our aspirations. I think if we were to go a week without getting a victory, I would almost say that there would be a wee bit of fear creeping in that we might not even make the top 6. We might have a season that kind of peters out somewhat.
If your kind of summary of us remaining in, or clutching onto fourth, I would call it, rather than remaining in fourth. The other side of the coin is that we could really have solidified our place, and we've not done that, taking 1 point. When you look at Hibs, Hibs have offered absolutely nothing. If you look again, I like to judge, I don't listen to what Sean Maloney has to say after the game. I know we're going to go and talk about Hibs, but they had no shots on target. When a team comes to Fir Park and has no shots on target, you would really expect to beat them without creating too much. And I can't blame Liam Donnelly for being sent off in the 70-odd minute. It makes these games, when you're getting beat with the likes of Ross County, now they're on a good run of form, obviously taking a point off your Rangers, fighting spirit. They've got a real gem in Charles Cook. Looks as if he's kind of possibly going to move on in this window, if only it was to us, but I can't see that happening. So even if you take the defeat against Ross County for what it was, I think the draw with Hibs could prove costly, because it could have gave us that, they took two extra points, could have gave us that wee bit of breathing space, which puts the pressure onto St Mirren. And as you say, this, it is make or break time. I think that obviously we've got Celtic at home. Celtic are going to go in, bookies favourites, but you just never know what happens. I mean, I was actually sitting with Mark at the game yesterday, and we were talking about, even when Celtic were flying in the even 90s and early 2000s, when they came to Fir Park, you could go in there and win every season against Celtic, even when they're winning leagues and stuff like that. It just doesn't seem to have been like that over the last 6-7 years with Old Firm at home.
Yeah, you're 100% right. I did a podcast earlier on, and we were discussing the fact that the guy that hosted the podcast was saying that Celtic consider Fir Park as a sticky fixture, one that isn't a gimme by any stretch of the imagination. Now, you go back to 2017 when we played Celtic after the League Cup final, and they get the late penalty in ridiculous fashion. The game finished 1-1. Then we drew 0-0 in the game that Scott Brown got Cedric Kipre sent off. And then the year finished with a 1-1 draw. Danny Johnson scored a late equaliser. So we had drawn three games in a row against Celtic. Since then, the end of 2018, we've played Celtic 10 times. We've lost every one of them. Now, obviously, not all of them have been at Fir Park, but in amongst that, there's been a 5-2 defeat against Celtic at Fir Park, a 4-0, and possibly one of the most comfortable 2-0 victories earlier on this season, where we simply didn't lay a glove on them. Celtic won't get many easier victories than the one they got at Fir Park earlier on this season. And I now kind of find that my mindset's shifted somewhat, and I began to write off these games before a ball's been kicked, because we just don't seem to have that knack of getting in their faces like we used to do, and at least ruffle them up. If we're going to lose, we would go down fighting, but there's been none of that recently.
I think you can include Rangers in that as well. I mean, we've put a couple of...
Well, with anything, actually, it's worse for Rangers.
Aye, but since we beat them in the playoffs, semi-final of the Cup, when we used to come to Fir Park, even when we went away from home, I was talking yesterday and recalling games that we went to Ibrox to win and we went to Celtic Park, and it just seems to have completely shifted. Motherwell were a team that Old Firm kind of feared, and it just seems to have, over the last, 7-8 years, as I said earlier, we're nothing. I've mentioned this before, that my son and his two nephews are 11 years old, and one of them asked me, "Has Motherwell ever beat Celtic? Have you ever seen Motherwell beating Celtic?" And I was like, I can't believe that he's asked me that. As if it's almost as if it's beyond us. And I think if that's what supporters of that age group are thinking of, Motherwell must never have beaten Celtic. When I was their age, I was going to the likes of Celtic Park and seeing Motherwell winning. So maybe I've lived and been really lucky to live through that and see it. And I really just hope that we're maybe getting ahead of ourselves. I know that we're not talking about the Celtic game as yet, but I think we really need to address that, particularly at home. You want to make Fir Park that kind of fortress again. I recall games where we're getting Celtic in the Cup and the first round of the Cup at Fir Park and putting them out and stuff like that. We need to get the days back. Ross County have had a good couple of performances against the Old Firm because they've been brave, they've fought hard, and I just feel as if we've not done that. And I can't tell you the last time that I went to a Motherwell v Rangers or Motherwell v Celtic game at Fir Park where I actually enjoyed it. And that's not down to the atmosphere or anything, it's down to our performance.
No, fair, and the thing is, I do actually put a wee bit of that down to the shift to a Sunday quite often in televised games. I always find that at 12:30 or 12 o'clock, or in Sunday's case, 1:30, the kickoffs, the games are a wee bit flat and just don't seem, I don't know, it's just not Saturday 3 o'clock. That being said, the last Celtic game at Fir Park was a 3 o'clock on a Saturday, and it was as poor as I can remember as being against Celtic. And there's no getting away, and we've kind of skipped right to the end of the podcast here by previewing the Celtic game, but that doesn't really matter, to be perfectly honest with you, because it'll be me that's editing it, and I'm not going to edit it. The Celtic have got a great deal of quality in that squad, and they brought in players that are very, very good, but they've also got players that are there to be got at. When we played Celtic the last time, I think they'd only won once or twice away from home all season. They were fragile at the back, and we knew that if we pressed them high and get in their faces, they were liable to make a mistake. In fact, I think they did a couple of times in the second half, and we had a wee bit of a shout for a penalty with a handball as well. And it just showed you, if we had that level of intensity and that desire to get at them, then we might get a wee bit of change out of them, but we just didn't do it. And
see, just another quick point, though, on Celtic. Sorry for putting in there, but I would go as far as say Muller have probably put in better performances at Celtic Park than what they have at Fir Park against Celtic.
Yeah, but again, I don't think that... I think that the mentality shifted there as well, where we're almost kind of satisfied to get away with a 1-0 or a 2-0 and move on. And it can be damaging to go and get a hammer. We got a really heavy one against Rangers last season, and we've already taken a 6-1 against Rangers at home this season. And I suppose it sparked a wee bit of a change, and a wee bit of change in desire as well, because following that, we then went and beat Aberdeen and we beat Hearts. You don't want to be embarrassed in the manner that we were in that game on Halloween. But it's just, yeah. And Graham Alexander said after the Celtic game at Parkhead, the 1-0 game, that we don't want to be kind of plucky losers. We want to be going to places like that and taking a result. But the performances don't really reflect that comment, I don't think. And that's not putting it at the door of Graham Alexander. We've had two or three managers before that. We just don't seem to be capable of putting a team out that can really challenge in any sort of way. And I think that you've got to look past the fact that they're a very good team with a lot of quality. You've actually got to consider as well that in a one-off game, anything can happen. You look at Ross County's performance yesterday against Rangers, a perfect example of that. Ross County shouldn't be getting a point against Rangers, but they had the belief and the desire to do so, and they thoroughly deserve getting a share of the spoils. We should be using that sort of result as a wee bit of inspiration, I think.
Aye, I mean, it's a sad day when you're using Ross County as inspiration, but I get the basis of the point. It is a real frustration that I always say that from the start of the season to the end, that you go through the blocks of fixtures, and you should beat Livingston at home, Ross County at home. And in years gone by, you would say, well, do you know what? I would maybe mark down that Rangers and Celtic as a draw. But now, it feels as if you're a million miles away from it. Now, I'm not one for saying that attitude and psychology and stuff like that, but it's almost getting like that. It's almost as if we're getting in with that expectation. I don't even think that some of the support believe that we can go and get a result, because it feels as if it's been so long since that's happened, particularly at Fir Park. And hopefully this weekend coming will change that. It would be brilliant. There's nothing beating one of the Old Firm in your own back garden. It's great. And I just want to be able to sample that with the boys that sit around my son and nephews. It's sad that they've never experienced that, and it's been a long time coming, and hopefully it's coming soon.
Yeah, fingers crossed. We'll rewind back to the Hibs game, and I think it will be a fairly brief conversation. This, a terrible night weather-wise, and an awful, awful game of football. You mentioned that Hibs didn't manage a shot on target. We didn't offer much of a threat either, it must be said. A Kevin Van Veen sitter just before half-time, been the pick of the chances. Stephen O'Donnell had an effort blocked in the second half when it looked like it had kind of opened up for him. Other than that, really not much to write home about. A bit of a frustrating evening. Liam Donnelly sent off. In the aftermath, Graeme Alexander sent to the stand for about the 12th time this season. Again, another wee bit of a talking point. Ross Tierney came off the bench. And then 15 minutes later, he was subbed as Alexander looked to shore up and ensure that we got any sort of result from the game. And I suppose it was vindicated in the sense that we didn't concede in the last 15, 20 minutes and held on for that 0-0 draw. Pepe, you messaged me at half-time and said that 0-0 written all over it. I think we could have went home at half-time and been pretty safe in the knowledge that there wasn't going to be a goal. And that's exactly how it transpired.
Yeah, the game just had that feel about it. The weather certainly didn't add to the entertainment value of the game. I was absolutely Baltic. I don't know if I'm getting older, but it took me about 2 hours to heat up when I came in for the game. But as you say, you could just tell that there was no going to be any goals. There was no entertainment value at all. I think a lot of people will disagree with me with this. I thought Liam Donnelly did all right. But at the same time, I was shouting for Alexander to get him off. Because I could see that he was going to get a red card in the conditions. He was flying into challenges and you could just see it. So why not make that substitute earlier? And I would also say that the front three wasn't working and that needed changed. And it seemed to be an age before he made any substitutions. And that's been one of the things that found flight a bit frustrating with Alexander. He seems to not want to change it too quickly. And in relation to the Tierney substitution, I actually agreed with him. I think the fans have taken to Tierney. It looks as if he gives 100% work rate. He's tenacious. He just really, really looks a good addition to the squad. But at the end of the day, he's the type of player that I think can be a luxury at times, particularly in a battle like that. You've got to remember, he's only young. He's came through the Irish League. And the manager, I think his man management with him would have been good and he'd have understood. Obviously, when back, he put Maguire back into the back three. Again, I have to say, I mention this quite often as well. Sorry if I'm repeating myself, but when you get that team line at kind of a usual times, the quarter two or whenever, if it's a midweek fixture, usually 6:30, around about that time, the hour and a quarter before, I have to say, I've got my, every time that I've seen that back four of McGinley, Carroll, Saul and O'Donnell, I'm like, why have we got Oyala and McGabby on the bench on Saturday? Yet we've got Carroll and McGinley both left backs playing. It would actually have made more sense to me if Carroll had played at the centre half. If McGinley played at the centre half rather than Carroll. I think McGinley is really, you hit the nail on the head on our last podcast to say, is he becoming a target? In the last couple of games, definitely. Absolutely no doubt of it. I see there's a bit of an ongoing debate about it on Twitter this evening about Nathan McGinley. And it may actually do him a bit of good just to get out of the starting 11. For sitting in fourth position, and I'm sitting just now thinking that we need to make quite a few changes, the one positive thing that I will say over the last few games has been that Callum Slattery's introduction, certainly, he would be one of the first ones in my starting 11 going forward. But it has been, if you go back to what you said at the very start, there is a bit of a concern for me that we don't really seem to be creating many chances. And when we do, even if there is a couple of clear cut, we just seem to be miles off it. And it is a bit of a concern. How does it change? Again, I would say the formation. I think Ross Tierney, I mentioned that this also in the last podcast. I think Tierney brings that option that you can change it. I think he has changed it a wee bit, maybe just sitting behind Roberts and Van Veen. But I think it needs a wee bit of freshen up and a change of kind of tactic.
Okay, so we've discussed the game, and on the substitution, I was fortunate enough to speak to Ross Tierney earlier on tonight for the programme against Celtic, and I asked him about the substitution, and he was obviously quite pragmatic about it. He said that he was quite reluctant to applaud the supporters first and foremost, because he didn't want it in any way to be misconstrued that the manager thought he was agreeing with the fans. Instead, he insisted that his only concern was that the team went on to get something from the game. So a very mature approach to that. Graeme Alexander seemingly as well had a conversation with him and explained that he hated having to do what he did on the night, but it was for the benefit of the team. And as much as I was pretty annoyed at the substitution as well at the time, I suppose the bigger picture is that you've got to ensure that you see out a game. And Graeme Alexander thought the best way to do that was to bring more defensive-minded players onto the park, which is fine, and it worked, and we got away with a 0-0. I thought it was a ludicrous second yellow card for Liam Donnelly. Really, it was a stupid place to have to lunge into a tackle like that. I don't think there was any malice in it or anything else, but it was a certain booking. Andrew Dallas had a poor night, but I think that was one decision that he got absolutely spot on. Alexander being sent to the stand, it's not something that's particularly uncommon, Pepe. Is that something that could affect the team going forward? I don't know about you, but I would prefer to see the manager in the dugout rather than halfway up the main stand. Though that being said, the likes of Chris Lucchetti, Keith Lasley, more than capable of filling that void in the short term. It's just a wee bit of restraint maybe needed. I get that he's passionate. He seemed to be a wee bit confused as to why he was sent to the stand on Wednesday night. Said it was for swearing. I'd imagine that there's not many words that aren't swear words that come out of manager's mouth over the course of 90 minutes, but he's not really learning from his mistakes by the same token, is he?
I actually don't remember a manager in my time supporting Motherwell, which is over 30 years now, ever getting in as much bother as Graeme Alexander. And as you say, you tend to learn from your mistakes, but he doesn't seem to be doing that. Does it bother me? I suppose on one hand, you look at it and you think, well, do you know what? It shows you how much he cares, shows you how passionate he is. But on the other hand, what kind of example is that showing to the players that he's meant to be leading? At the end of the day, if in any walk of life, if your boss does something wrong, then you say, well, you're accountable for that. And I just don't think it's a good way going forward, but you're not going to change them. On this occasion, it did look kind of a strange that it was a straight red card. There seems to be I mean, going back years ago, where it used to just be that the manager would be pointed to the stand, but now they're getting yellow cards and red cards, so it's straight out with the red card. So what he said, who knows? But it is a trait of his personality. Do you want to change that? I really don't know. As you say, it is important that his voice is heard down there, but maybe this is moving the dugout is having its disadvantage now. I still kind of get used to that, by the way, looking over, looking for the sub and still seeing the dugout to the left-hand side. So maybe the linesman is picking up more than what he's saying, I don't know. I think that's maybe a poor excuse if that's where we're at with it, but I think he needs to have a look at himself. It can't continue. I mean, he's going to end up, how many times is that? There isn't a game goes by that I can recall that he's not been spoken to.
Yeah, and maybe I'm being over analytical of this situation, but it's kind of what you would say when you're taking your boys' club, essentially. Like, if you're acting like that on the touchline, does that rub off on the players? I would imagine that more experienced players maybe brush it off and just see it as a a trait of the manager, but it doesn't really kind of... I think it will be harder to install discipline when your players are acting like that. When your manager's acting like that at times. I don't know whether it rubs off on the players. Donnelly's reaction, he did kind of try and argue the toss when the referee went to produce the card. And I didn't really understand that, because as soon as he lunged into it, it was absolutely clear as day what was going to follow. And as you said, they had a few moments like that where the warning signs were there that he was going to get sent off if he didn't get subbed off. And that's exactly what happened.
I have to say, I usually don't down referees, but this season, my time following football again, I just feel as if the quality of referee has been absolutely shocking, particularly Andrew Dallas. Every time I see him, I'm like, oh, we'll either get a man sent off or we'll get a penalty against us. I just think that it's a stick on every week. There was an incident yesterday. I don't know if you can explain it any better, but the pass-back rule where Liam Kelly ends up, or the pass-back rule, the pass-back moment where the referee gives a free kick. I just feel as if it's been such a long time where you can come away laughing, where we've actually benefited from a poor refereeing decision. And that's maybe adding to Graham Alexander's frustration. But at the end of the day, the old saying is you lead by example and you've got to go on. I mean, it is difficult. As you mentioned, I do take my boys' team, and it is difficult. You get carried away into the game. But if I'm standing shouting and swearing like an idiot, which I'm not saying that I've never done, but you do try to control that. But that's going to have an impact on the boys. So you do have to try and kind of mellow it down. End of the day, whatever he says or whatever he does, isn't it going to change the referee's mind? Is it going to try and influence your next decision? I mean, recently I've been doing refereeing at futsal in a tournament that our boys are playing in. And there was one team that were giving me absolute pelters last week. And I couldn't understand why. And it was almost as if it was just it was trying to be like a bullying type thing. And I thought, I couldn't believe it. I actually went over to the other team and said, did you think that was wrong or whatever? And it wasn't. So I don't know whether that's just that's just the way he is. But I don't think it can continue. It can't be healthy for anybody, us not having our manager at the side to make split decisions. But at the end of the day, it is what it is, and I really just don't think he'll change.
Discuss the arrivals of two new players at Fir Park over the course of the last week. By the time this comes out, there may be more. The transfer window closes on Monday night. We're currently recording on the Sunday night. We'll deal with Joe Efford first, Pepe, because his name's much easier to say than the other guy. An American striker signed from a Belgian side for an undisclosed fee. He'll be here till the summer of 2023. He's had quite a few clubs over his career. He's 25. First and foremost, we started the podcast by talking about the fact that we're struggling for goals. Hopefully, Joe can come into the team and make quite a quick impact. There's almost kind of a wee bit of pressure on him straight away because we are so devoid of goals just now.
I love the fact that you described our second or our first new signing as the other guy. That is what I'll refer to him as for his full Miller career now, the other guy. Joe, what can you say? The only thing that I picked up on straight away was that Graham Alexander said he can play right across that front three. And to me, that almost makes you feel as if he's more of a wide player. Although you go and watch him in YouTube and he played number 9 when he scored the 11 goals in 18 games or whatever it was. So yes, I agree. We made Steve Robinson, 99% of our transfer business was done for the English lower leagues, whereas now the one thing that Graham Alexander's is doing is we've signed the likes of Yala, Saul Sondre Johansson, it's taken me up till now to get that name right. Joe Efford from American, he's played all over Europe. And the other guy, who he's obviously had been a manager at Fleetwood. So, what can you say about these two signings? There's nothing that anybody can say. We can't really form an opinion. They look kind of quite athletic. They look quite physical, which will probably match Graeme Alexander's kind of tactics. But yes, I mean, is it an opportunity to maybe play a 4-4-2 with him and Van Veen as kind of two focal point strikers, going back to old school kind of ways? Who knows? I don't know if you can enlighten us any further with regards to the, is he going to be eligible to play against St Mirren? I know we've announced it, and I know that we've explained about the work permit situation, but it mentioned that they had some agreement in place. I don't know if that's so that they could announce the signing. So I don't know what the timescale is. Hopefully he's able to play it at St Mirren on Tuesday night.
The short answer to that is I don't know. I know that the clearance process is slightly more complex than it used to be. Actually, I wasn't at the game yesterday because I was covering Hamilton Air United, and the guy that scored the equalising goal for Air yesterday had signed from Crawley the day before. He only got clearance in the morning of the game, despite the fact he'd been training on the Friday. So they only were able to pencil him in as a substitute. And then at midday, they got the clearance through. So I think it's all a wee bit kind of up in the air on lastminute.com just now. So to cut a long story short, no, I don't know what the process will be for international clearance for Joe Efford. Though I would imagine that, given that we've had the experience with Zach Grella all these years ago, where we announced the signing and didn't get the clearance, I think that this one must be done and we're just waiting on the everything being rubber stamped and good to go. So I would expect him to be ready in the next couple of days.
I know that there's obviously complications with Brexit and stuff like that, because obviously the other guy, Victor, is French and... he's French. I was getting corrected there. Ben's listening to me and said he was Dutch, but no, he's French. So I don't know what the situation is with that. I did read that Alan Burrow said since Brexit that the transfer situation is far more complicated, and what would usually take you a few days could take you a couple of weeks, but it didn't expand to say whether or not it'll be a couple of weeks before he signs. But I suppose we'll find out soon enough on Tuesday, but don't hold your breath to get any update for Graeme Alexander, because he'll probably tell you that he's not got a work permit, and then before you know it, he's starting against St Mirren on Tuesday night.
Yeah, he certainly wouldn't. You wouldn't take much of what's said at these pre-match press conferences at face value. Another player that you mentioned there, Victor Nyrenold, that's the best you're going to get from me there in terms of pronunciation. His career reads like a world tour. There's not many places that he's not been. Primarily a right-sided defender. He can play at centre-back or full-back. 6'4". They say that he's also played at right midfield. So, yeah, he's been about. He looks like a player that is there to bolster the squad, really. And who knows if he gets an opportunity to come in and makes an impact, then we might end up with a really positive signing there. It's so hard to tell. And I think the days of signing a player and knowing about him are well behind us. It's very, very rare that we bring someone in and we know anything, really. It's all a bit of guesswork required, and you'll kind of see what they're all about when they actually pull on a strip and play in front of you.
The only thing I would say is you wonder how the Graeme Alexander judges it, and how is it all done through watching videos and stuff like that. I mean, I've done a a scouting during lockdown, done an SFA scouting course, and they were saying a lot of kind of professional teams, a lot of it now is down to kind of a watching digital footage of players rather than sending scouts all over the place to get the reports. So it would be quite interesting to find out an insight of how Alexander makes a decision, if it is him that makes that decision on the likes of Oyala, Sondre Johansson. Obviously he's worked with Victor, but it is quite I think the signing of the our new kind of forward Joe Efford, I think that's quite a pivotal signing. So I would like to kind of know the insight into how we make that decision. I think it's quite an interesting, obviously if you were talking about Crawley, so if you're going to go and sign a player for Crawley, you can quickly jump on a flight or train or drive down and watch them in whatever, a bounce game or whatever, and you get to see them in the flesh. I think I'm just a wee bit old fashioned and I prefer that type of thing if you're going to sign a player. So it's just probably moving with the times, isn't it? But certainly Oyala looks like a player. Sondre looks as if he's the majority of the time that he's good. He's had a few shaky moments recently, but all in all he looks like a good signing, so they obviously must do their homework.
In terms of outgoings, it looks like Ricky Lammy is, he's at Motherwell numbered. He has signed a pre-contract with Dundee. After the game yesterday, Graeme Alexander said that he's looking to retain the services of Ricky Lammy, which sort of surprises me given that he's not played them for so long. Again, Pepe, it's one of these ones where I think the appearances for Ricky Lammy this season have on the whole been pretty positive, certainly much improved than last season. It's a player that arrived and with a wee bit of expectation about, and he really endured a pretty torrid first season. Used sparingly this season, has done a bit better, and now he looks to be moving on. It's all in all a bit underwhelming, the whole process, to be honest with you.
It doesn't bother me if Ricky Lammy moves on. I think he's replaceable. I think he's done all right. Would he ever be my first choice centre-half? Probably not. He's good to have as a backup, and that's as far as it goes with me. And I think he realises that at Motherwell. I think that's a big factor in why he's moving on. Dundee certainly seem to be able to put some wages there. Both Dundee clubs seem to have a fair bit of money, but I'm not going to lose any sleep over losing Ricky Lammy. There's also rumours as well that Mugabe could be moving on. Obviously, I was his biggest critic going back last year, but this year I think his improvement, whether it's been the coaching for Graeme Alexander, Chris Lacetti and Keith Lasley, I don't know. I would certainly prefer us to keep Mugabe than Ricky Lammy. If losing Lammy and we keep Mugabe, I think we've won a watch. And I think probably the signing of Victor, the other guy, I'm not going to try and say his second name, is probably a replacement for Ricky Lammy. So I don't really see why we would need to keep him until the end of the season. I'm not one for this. I hate this signing for another team in our league, and potentially they could be playing against that team. I just don't like it. It's different from the Tony Watt scenario where he's scoring goals and stuff like that. But with Ricky Lammy, I would just right on you go. See you later. Thanks for the mistakes that you made, and that's it. I mean, he's done all right, but again, as I said right at the start, I'm not going to lose any sleep about Ricky Lammy moving to Dundee.
Another player heading through the exit door was Dara O'Connor, who's going on loan to the south until the end of the season. A guy that really hasn't had much game time whatsoever, Pepe. And I think that given we seem to have a wee bit of injury problems at the back, it was a wee bit surprising to see that we weren't keeping him about. Like I said, Yanni Ayala has never been able to remain fit. Mugabe has been out of the team for a couple of weeks. There's rumours that he may be departing the club. it would suggest to me that if O'Connor's been sent out on loan, we should have Mugabe beyond the close of the transfer window, but can't say that with any degree of certainty, obviously. It's an opportunity for game time, of course it is. I just was slightly surprised that he was deemed far enough out the picture to be farmed out on loan.
I mean, I would rather have a Dara O'Connor sitting in the squad than Ricky Lamy, if that's what it comes down to. It's kind of, you're stuck between a rock and a hard place, because he's certainly going to get more game time going to Queen of the South. I did check yesterday and seen that he was playing for Queen of the South. I thought that he started his Motherwell career pretty well, and I was quite surprised that he kind of fell away and wanted to get injured latterly. But I hope that he comes back. I don't even know what his contract status was. Was it a year or 2 years that he signed? But he certainly looked as if he had the attributes that he could be a decent player. Just when we're on the subject of loans, I think I would quite like to see Dean Cornelius get out on loan. I think, from what I saw of him, I think he's got something about him. I love the fact that he's one of us, basically. And I really want him to succeed. And I think seeing him get out on a similar type loan is with Dara O'Connor to maybe a Partick Thistle or a Dunfermline or somebody like that. I think that would really benefit him, and in the long run it would benefit us as well. I mean, yesterday Goss came on, and I think Goss has went really down on my, he's just a poor bit of form again, so he seems to be right far out the picture. So hopefully he can get a loan move and kick his career on, and he comes back to into contention for next season. But who knows if that's what Graeme Alexander and the management team want.
Yeah, tomorrow should be interesting. I would expect there'll certainly be a few moves out of our park. I wouldn't mind to see some new faces as well, but I think that really all depends on the circumstances of which players are moving out the door as well. There might be certain players that the manager just deems surplus to requirements and doesn't have to replace. Quickly, we'll end on the St Mirren game on Tuesday night. We've already previewed the Celtic game, so we're kind of skipping about all over the place. But a fixture that we've had a fair degree of success in, especially in Paisley, it must be said, that we've got a very good record there. The majority of recent meetings between Motherwell and St Mirren have ended in a draw. I think you have to go back to December of 2020 for the last time that St Mirren registered a win over Motherwell. That said, it'll still be a difficult game. Of course it will be. They've started the year, they won at Tannadice. They looked pretty impressive in doing so. They then beat Aberdeen as well at home. They've beaten Ayr United in the Scottish Cup. So a good start to the year. Their game yesterday was postponed away to Dundee. They'll fancy this. They've pushed up the league a wee bit following those two victories. They've not made the top six since the split was introduced. That's clearly a big target of theirs. And they'll believe with the results of the teams in and around them just now that's not an unrealistic proposition. They were to win their game in hand at Dundee and they were to beat us on Tuesday night, they would move on to 31 points. We've currently got 32, so it's all to play for. It's a game of massive significance, especially with that Celtic game on the horizon, where I think we've both agreed that while we would like to see us put in an improved performance and get a result, realistically it'll be a very, very hard task. St Mirren away is a huge game for us.
It certainly is. I mean, I'm just looking at the coming in my head there, thinking, when was the last time we actually won away from home? And I'm looking down, and it was actually Aberdeen in November. So we've had quite a shitey away form in the last wee while. Where when Alexander came in, we actually done pretty well on the road. obviously getting his first victory up at Ross County. So we've been really poor. I've been in the majority of the games. Unfortunately, we weren't at Aberdeen when we last won. And majority of the performances away from the home have been absolutely terrible. So we really need to get a performance. And as you say, St Mirren seem to be on the rise, although I do see that they potentially are going to be victims of the transfer window, where they're going to get Hibs are looking to sign Jamie McGrath, and they're going to get Alec Gogic to come in and play his favourite other team, where he seems to always want to stick an elbow into somebody. But I think it is a real vital game. We need to go there. We need to get the 3 points on the board. Next two games, Celtic, Dundee United. Again, would you be happy with 2 points? Would you be happy with 1 point out of the next two? So it's really, really vital that we go and get three. And we're capable of it. I mean, when you look at the teams on paper, I would say that we've probably got the stronger squad. But you need to pick the right players for that. And I'm going to go back to it again. If you start with Nathan McGinley and Carroll in your back four, I think right away I'll be regretting my decision to go. I really do think that we've spoke about a signing Victor. He's sitting on the bench. He can play at centre half, but we've got a left back playing at centre half. We've got Oyala, we've got Mugabe. Surely we've got to play players in a recognised position. I get this whole, we need players that can play in 1, 2, 3 positions, but you've got to have your strength. You've got to play to your strengths. You can't just piece a team together and hope for the best. And yes, I get that there's been injuries and stuff like that, but see if they're on the bench. Graham Alexander said this at the start of the season. If they're on the bench, they're fit enough to play. So why are we not playing players in the right position?
Yeah, I agree completely. And I think we're approaching the stage as well where we've pretty much got a full squad to pick from. So you'd think you'd be utilising that in the strongest way possible. And I think that the way we've set up in the first three league games back has played a part in the results that we've got. So things definitely need to improve results-wise and performance-wise. I don't think that we've been anywhere near the levels that we were before Christmas. You even think of the St Johnstone and the Livingston game prior to the winter break. We weren't remarkable, but we were really, really solid. And we won these games, albeit Livingston get a goal late on, but we won these games with a bit to spare. And these are the kind of bread and butter results that you really need to be getting. Hibs at home is never an easy game, and going to Tynecastle is always very difficult. Ross County are tough to beat at home, of course they are, but I would have thought we would have got better than 1 point from a possible 9. And it's given teams the opportunity and a wee bit of belief that they can catch up with us. I think the likes of McGrath going to Hibs is a very good signing. He's come over from the League of Ireland, performed really well for St Mirren, got into the Ireland side. Now he's getting his move. We've got another kind of trial project there in Ross Tierney, I think. And again, it was something I brought up with Ross earlier on, that he must look at guys like McGrath and have that desire to push on and hopefully challenge for a place in the national side. And he believes that while that's a long, long way away, Motherwell gives him a perfect platform to do so. So that was something that kind of got me thinking as well. I think there'll be a few hidden gems in that Irish league that we will, if Tierney's a success, will try to exploit. I wouldn't be surprised to see St Mirren going back to that market as well, given they'll stand to make given the success of McGrath so far and Paisley, and if he goes, he'll have gone and making a fair impact, that's it, man.
No, I think as well, I mean, just on the Irish market, I mean, Celtic have certainly looked at that with the guy's skills that they've signed, and they signed another striker as well. But just going back to a point that you made there about the performances, I would slightly disagree with you. I think the performance against Hibs, I would say that we were probably the better team. The Ross County, the first half performance, I felt that we dominated the game until the game changed after they went to 10 men. Psychologically, we chucked it. Yesterday, I felt that, even more so when I watched Sports Scene, if we'd taken our chances, we could have come away with a draw or a win. If you go back to some of the games that we won near the start of the season, Ross County, we were terrible, winning 1-0. Games against Aberdeen at home and away, we were, you can say, fortunate to win. Games are won by putting the ball in the back of the net, and we did that. But the difference now is what we said at the very start of this podcast, where we seem incapable of scoring goals. We said that last week, and there is now going to be a fair bit of pressure on this new signing to really hit the ground running. That being said, I still would prefer another forward-thinking player, more of a stereotypical number nine striker, poacher, physical player that's going to stand up there. I'm not going to say that I wanted to sign Kyle Lafferty, but somebody in that kind of ilk, somebody who's tried and tested, an older head that's played in the UK, that's known, that's got experience, that's going to score us a few goals. Where we get somebody like that, I don't know. Will we get somebody like that? I probably doubt it. But it's pivotal that we start taking these chances. And there's a lot of pressure on Van Veen, and we really need to wait and see how this Joe effort works out. As you said, there's pressure on him before he's even kicked a ball.
Mate, I think that's pretty much all we've got for tonight. As always, thank you very much for your time, and let's look forward to a big week ahead. And I'll see you in Paisley on Tuesday night.
Yes, you will. Hopefully, our first away victory for a considerable amount of time. So let's hopefully we can get back on the positive podcast rather than it being kind of relatively negative.
Fingers crossed, pal. You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back following the Celtic game at the start of next week. Until then, thank you. Goodbye. Can't take